We're going to start committee. I can't call us to order yet because we do not have quorum. But out of respect for Representative Howe, I know he has other commitments. We are just going to go ahead. Representative Howe, you have House File 3447. Why don't you describe your bill as we're waiting to get quorum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, House File 3447 is an attempt to focus minute on smaller projects that I believe, and many others do, that are better suited for their skill set. This is done by making it a priority to provide IT support services above and before developing and designing specific IT projects. It requires projects over $100,000 to be subject to contracts with one or more vendors. And then it requires a report on that project prior to going live. And that's the meat of the bill. So this is just an attempt to make MINUTE a more effective, efficient agency. Okay. That's the bill.
That's the bill. Thank you. All right. I am going to ask if there's anyone that wishes to testify on your bill. And I believe the commissioner is here. Commissioner, did you want to testify on House File 3447? And then just be aware, we haven't officially called ourselves to order yet, and I may need to interrupt you when that happens. So, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3447. I do have some concerns about the impacts of project costs and timelines of IT projects over the 100,000 threshold, and what that would be required in vendor contracting. As the bill currently reads, we would be required to hire a vendor to carry out a project regardless of whether current state employees are able and available to perform the services by the contract, is how it reads right now. It would be a poor use of tax dollars to pay twice for project work because the statute requires us to hire a vendor to perform a project that we could task employees already on staff with carrying out the project work on. Additionally, we want to indicate that the need for some additional clarity would need to be brought to Section 6 of the bill, which would require that the IT project impacting local government be field tested by local government before being deployed. We've actually reached out to the Association of Minnesota Counties, who is advocating for this language, to better understand their desired scope for this requirement. As the bill currently reads, it is unclear if the requirement is intended to apply to the rollout for a wholly new IT system or whether this would apply for a systems upgrade or any functionality system being added or any bug fix that is being released. The AMC has expressed a willingness to work with us to clarify the language so that we're all on the same page. Ultimately, the scope of the requirement will also dictate the scope of the fiscal impact that would have, and so just some concerns that I want to highlight on this bill. Again, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to express some of the concerns on this bill at hand.
Okay. I appreciate that. I'm going to see if there's anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill. And while you're coming up, I'm going to take care of some housekeeping items here. I'm going to move that House File 3447 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Members, within your packets, you have two sets of minutes. Representative Kunesh Podin, do you want to move the minutes for March 29th?
I do. I move to approve the minutes for March 29th, 2018.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The March 29th minutes are approved. And then Representative Green, you want to move the April 10th minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for April 10th.
Representative Green moves the April 10th. Minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Alan Starwich-Davis. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Department of Administration. I'm here today to respectfully request that the chair request a fiscal note on this bill. We believe that there are fiscal impacts that need to be accounted for with this bill.
Great. And is that it?
That's all.
All right. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Members, any questions? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this would be to the commissioner and possibly the bill author there. How much does $100,000 buy you nowadays in a contract for IT services? Or is it 200? Where's the benchmark?
Well,
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Uglum. I will tell you that the $100,000 came right out of the air. And I know that Minnett and I have had some initial discussions that it may be too low. I have not heard from them where the right target number is, and I'm open to change that if that's 200,000, if that's 300,000, if it needs to be different in wordings to systems instead of projects, I'm okay with that. My effort here is to target them and make that emphasis more on system maintenance and security rather than building new systems. And I think that's where it needs to go. And if they want to provide me some guidance and some verbiage to make that happen, I'm all ears to amend this to make it so it's more effective in their organization.
Representative.
Thank you, Representative Howell. I think that's a great approach. I think because I have no idea either if $100,000 is going to do it or if it's $750,000, whatever. But thank you very much. I appreciate the input there.
Any other questions, members? Commissioner Claiborne, if you can come back. I'm looking at the piece on page 4, subdivision 11. This is the portion that is impacting local government. Now, one of the issues that was raised in the report that we reviewed yesterday on Meekin and Minnett and just how your overall operations go was the fact that there wasn't proper testing done with the entities that were involved in using the final end product. That was a major criticism throughout the report, that had that taken place, a lot of the bugs that then were discovered upon the launch in July 24th, that would have been addressed. So can you talk to me a little bit, because I view this language as helping to fix some of that problem. Talk to me a little bit more about what your concerns are on this language in particular. Give me a better description on that. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members, when I'm looking at subdivision 4, you're referring to the evaluation procedure?
I'm looking on page 4, subdivision 11, systems impacting local government.
Page 4.
Section 6.
Oh, I see that portion. Madam Chair, members, my concern with this is that, first off, we need to understand the impact of the local unit. I do believe that field testing is a fundamental of IT release, but the scope in which it is field tested, the amount of participation, does that mean members of every local community? Does that mean members that comprise of multiple local governments? What is the requirement for the project itself? Is this a new system? Is this also applied to a software upgrade? Where are the parameters around it that give clarity as to full release or deployment, which are not traditionally terms that we would use? And then what is the parameter if it's not the system that they are really unhappy about, but the underlying policy that the legislature has put in place that is requiring the system?
Okay. Well, as I'm reading it, and I'll just, Commissioner, I'm looking on page 4, line 6, and you had referenced that your concern of, you know, how many local units of government does this entail? And in the language here, it says by at least one local unit of government. So if you were in the case of an NLAR system, obviously this impacted the entire state. But in this situation, they would have said at least one local unit of government would have participated in the testing of the software before it went into play. So I think that addresses the concern that you have there. What I'm more interested in is if you can provide us with language, I think that would be helpful on the other concerns of giving some definition to it. But I also see some folks of the local government folks that can maybe give us some greater detail too, and I'd ask you to come to the table as well.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgard, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization that represents all Minnesota's 87 counties. And I'll try to be brief. This issue actually came out of one of our policy committees by the work of two members, commissioners, one of them Anoka County Commissioner Rhonda Sivaraja, and the other Olmsted County Commissioner Sheila Cascaden. And it was an effort to say that if there are major IT upgrades, developments, projects, new systems, that minutes and any kind of administration is reaching out and actually working with local units of government to test those technologies so that we know that they work. So I'm glad to hear it sounds like everyone is at least in acknowledgement that that's a good idea, and I think that we're all willing to be working on the particulars of the language to make sure it actually fundamentally works. So the commissioner has our commitment to work to figure out if there's some parameters that would be suitable for this bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hilgard. And to Commissioner, this maybe will give you some peace of mind. If you look on page 4, again, line 9 of the bill, it says standards for field testing that meet the requirements of the subdivision must be incorporated into the project. So you would be able to develop that plan in working with the different units so that you would have parameters around what this would all entail, and I think that addresses the other concern that you expressed. But I'm anxious to look forward to see if you can work something out with the counties that has different language. But as I think that we've got it covered here, but I'm wait to hear from you in the future if there's any other items that you want to have. I've got Representative Nash and Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wanted to thank Representative Howe for letting me amend this into his bill when we were in government operations. It seemed like eons ago, or it felt like eons ago. But I think that the gist of what this amendment was designed to do was to say to counties and other government entities that are going to be potentially suffering at the hands of a piece of software that's rolled out, perhaps like Minlar's, that testing regimen prior to go live would have alleviated a lot of the problems that we have seen with Minlar's, because it would have been caught by people who use this software every day in their business. So lots of county-owned registrars, they would have found out what's wrong. They would have been able to raise a red flag and say, hey, not working so much, and you should probably go back and fix this before you go live. This just makes sense. So if your clients are going to be using something, and the clients in this case are the counties and other registrars, if they would have been included in the testing regimen, they would have found out and would have been able to articulate that this is broken long before we ever went down this road. So, Representative Howe, thanks so much.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the things I enjoy about this section is the fact that in all the testimony, I've not heard a coherent definition of alpha and beta testing protocols, and every organization I've been involved with has had a fairly detailed, so we could understand the go, no go, general criteria instead of just the details. And I think this adds a key component to, if you're out, and no offense, there's government world and then there's what I call the real world. In the real world, you don't do anything without having the input feedback, you're not going to release it unless the customer gives you that input feedback and you have an idea of what their take is on it. And I think this formalizes something that I wish was part of the standard operating procedure, but because it wasn't visible, I think local people felt there was a need, and I support their opinion on that. And looking at the bill, the only thing I would maybe like is assurance from the author that we look at maybe having a charge code specifically for cybersecurity, so no matter what project we have an idea of what expenses are being tailored to that. And that will help us in the future when we're analyzing what we're spending on, what's effective and what's not. If there's an audit in the future. But I think this is government learning how to do things better after a minor mishap. Thank you.
Representative Howell, any comment?
No, if we can work that language in, I'm definitely open to it, but I'm not quite sure how to make that happen. So we'll have to have some discussions to figure out exactly the verbiage to try and do something like that.
Great. Closing comments, Representative Howell?
Well, no, Madam Chair, I thank you for the support. I thank you for the questions. I look forward to working with Minnit to try and come up with some language that actually will identify what we need to have happen to make this a successful piece of legislation.
Appreciate it. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3447 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Howell. Thank you, Commissioner. All right, Representative Nash. We're going to move, Representative Nash moves House File 2868 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Nash, it looks like you've got an amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, if we could move the A1 to put it in the form that I'd like.
Representative Nash moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that he would like. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. 2-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You've heard me talk about cybersecurity a lot, so I won't beat the drum too much on that. But realistically, every day in the state of Minnesota, millions of people do business that creates data here at the state. And we need to do a better job of taking care of that data. There are cyber attacks that happen from all over the world. It's not just somebody in his mom's basement tapping away the keyboard. It is nation states. It is professional organizations in other countries that are commercializing the data that reside here in the databases that we have in the state of Minnesota. I am trying to apply a private sector, real world, to use Representative Kwan's words, approach to cybersecurity, which is to say that a percentage, now 3.5% in the bill, 3.5% of all spend for IT that is through Minnit will have a 3.5% peel off to put towards cybersecurity. What this does is it helps keep in check the amount of growth of IT with the amount of IT that is being secured and protected. So that is the goal of the bill, is to provide an ongoing, long-term solution to cybersecurity funding. And I wanted to thank Chair Anderson for last year putting money into the bill to do cybersecurity funding. That didn't happen. This is a different solution to the same need. Data grows. We have more and more of it. It's not going away. We have to find a way to make this a reality. So there are some testifiers that are going to be coming forward. But members, it is our responsibility to be the caretakers of the data that resides in the databases that we have. And each and every one of your constituents and you yourself are in those databases. So I personally don't want to be the person that looks in the eye of some of my constituents and say, well, sorry, we got it wrong because we didn't put money towards it. But I'm sure you'll be fine in 30 years after your identity has been compromised. But have a great day. So with that, Madam Chair, I know there's at least one testifier, and I will also be happy to take questions.
Great. So is it Aaron Call that is going to be testifying? Mr. Call, can you join us, please? Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Aaron Call. I'm the state's Chief Information Security Officer. First, I'd like to thank Representative Nash for his effort to promote cybersecurity investment through House File 2868. It recognizes the need for increased focus on cybersecurity and attempts to address the challenge by redirecting current IT spend. It is our mutual responsibility to figure out how to address this issue before Minnesota finds itself in the news, the next embarrassing victim of an avoidable cyber attack. As the state's chief information security officer, I am responsible for the security of our state's and citizens' information, and I take that responsibility with great seriousness. Narrowly viewed, this bill would help equip the state's security program to be more effective against this evolving threat. Without a commensurate increase in funding, this bill, as drafted, would force Minute Partners to reallocate budget, which is particularly disruptive mid-biennium. We, as Minute broadly, are concerned about some agencies reallocating from application support and development activities, negatively impacting the function of some of our applications. Another option could be the delay of modernization projects that, in the long term, hinders our ability to efficiently protect the state. Still others would be forced to cut corners in other areas of IT in order to maintain the levels of service they provide today while complying with the mandate. Nonetheless, I think we can find language that increases security for Minnesotans without putting other operations at undue risk. Again, thank you, Representative Nash. I look forward to working with you on this bill, and I'm optimistic that we can arrive at language that helps protect Minnesotans.
Okay. Before we move on, is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Marsh. I'm wondering how, if this bill is signed into law by the governor, it might help protect the statewide voter registration system, the Secretary of State and his office, and protecting the data in the statewide voter registration system.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair and Representative Pugh, the Secretary of State is not a Minute client. They are a standalone. I do have another bill that appropriates money for cybersecurity at the Secretary of State, but I'm glad that you're thinking along those lines because, again, none of us want to be the person that looks the voter in the eye and say, hey, your data is now in the hands of somebody else. But this focuses the effort solely on those who are Minute clients or subscribers. And to address Mr. Call's concern about some of the existing projects or potentially scheduled projects from being deprived of some money. And it's a legitimate concern. But if you remember what I said in my initial testimony, we don't want the growth of IT to outstrip us protecting that information that is in those projects. And I would argue that we are currently outstripping the protection. And that is something that is deeply concerning to me. I would hope it's deeply concerning to you as well. It is something that we can fix. And again, this is not a revolutionary idea. This is something that is being done in the private sector every single day, that the mandate is to not grow faster than you can essentially keep the wall around the castle. You don't want to grow beyond the castle wall.
Representative
Pugh?
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not sure how to direct this to an on a fiscal note, possibly somebody from Minute, but I'm looking at the $87,000 expenditure that would have to be done to implement this, and my question is, why aren't we doing this already? You know, they're talking about another $87,000 to track how much we're basically spending on cybersecurity and analyze it, and my thought is that we should be probably doing that already, and if we're not, I'm not sure why we need a fiscal note, because maybe it should be implemented under the current budget.
Mr. Call, would you care to comment?
Madam Chair, members, there is an accounting mechanism in place for tracking some cybersecurity spend. It does not account for project-based spend and other things that would have to be accounted for as part of this 5%, so as to maximize credit, so to speak, to those agencies.
Representative Vogel.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, I guess my concern is cybersecurity like everybody else. And if we're not having a good tracking system already that would give us these numbers, then maybe we should be doing that. And I recognize that there might be some additional costs, but I'm not so sure that that should be a result of this bill. It should be done already, and that's my basic question here, is why we're getting a fiscal note for something that should be there or is there and not maybe being properly enhanced.
Mr. Call, do you care to comment?
Madam Chair, members, so today security spend exists in a number of different locations. Not all of it is controlled directly by FinDeps that I have direct insight into. A great deal of it is being provided under the policies and standards and direction promulgated from my program, but not the budget is not tracked as part of those controls.
Representative Ogle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess probably no use having more question and answer on this because it's something I believe should be done, but I would suggest that maybe Minute look at tracking what we're doing on cybersecurity, whether or not this bill is implemented.
Well, I think that actually, if you look on page 7 in the last paragraph, they obviously are tracking it because they state that 3% of the state agencies is for cybersecurity, and they have that amount at $13 million. So they're already performing the function, so I don't know why this would be something new. But you raise a very good point, Representative Vogel.
Maybe we need an independent legislative budget office.
Well, I think you have a bill for that, don't you? Representative Lilly. Oh,
thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash. I know you're very earnest on the security thing. Yesterday I was on capital investment, and you have that bill for capital security, and I think it's a great bill, and it's great to be thinking about those things and important because it is a changing world. So carrying that same argument forward, I mean, this really is a changing world. As we well know, we had Secretary of State sitting where you were and saying that, you know, our state's being, you know, preyed on or started to be, and there's all sorts of new sorts of different types of threats. So just my concern isn't upping the game in cybersecurity ever. It's just the way you're going about it. And so it just kind of, I know you're a sports guy, but it's just kind of like, you know, the Twins maybe saying, hey, I care about cybersecurity, but I don't want to invest in it. So it reminds me like the Twins say they want to win. Oh, we want to win, but they're not going to hire a pitcher. So you're not going to up your game. Or I know you like soccer, and our soccer team just hired a new midfielder, you know, so that they can help their chances of winning. So these are just examples, but I'm not necessarily, I mean, I'm totally in favor of, you know, what you're, you know, caring about security, and we all need, every one of us. I mean, these threats are real every day on our phones. There's predators out there. And like you say, it's not the old person sitting in a basement, maybe like it used to be. It's serious, organized threats. And the data that our state has, we had a great opportunity to tour with the Revenue Department, but they have, you know, wealth of information, and they have real threats every day that are going on over there. But maybe a better analogy is, I don't know if you remember the movie Monty Python. So I think what you're doing is a little bit like that. You're like, you know, you're kind of making, turning the state into, I'll fight you. But, you know, you're cutting arms off, and you're, you know, so you're not really giving the state a fair fight to, you know, I just wish we'd fully fund things, and then, you know, so that the state and we'd have the proper tools, you know. So, you know, Monty Python, where the movie, so the guy's basically sitting there with no arms and legs, and so that's what I feel like you're doing a little bit. And I know that you're sincere, that you care about these issues, and, you know, it's not some theater that you're playing, but it's, I just wish you would help the state be successful. That's all.
Madam Chair.
Just a second. Is there anyone else that has questions? Otherwise, do you want to respond to that, Representative Nash?
I do. Okay. Madam Chair. And Representative, it's really more than just a flesh wound. the entities that buy from Minute should be participating in the acquisition of cybersecurity tools that are going to be deployed on their behalf. So if you remember, I talked to the fact that Chair Anderson put money in last year's budget bill, which we put out there. Last year was a budgeting year, this year is not. So now we have to find a way to get the same tools, but we have fewer ways to get it done. This is a way that we can actually get it done. This is a way that's being done in the real world, and it is largely successful. And again, remember that this is something that should be happening, and it's really not. We've heard a number of instances, and I think of Mr. Call and before him Mr. Boozy as sometimes just barely holding it all together. and we have to provide a better way to do that. Last year's bill didn't work out. The governor chose to reappropriate that money for something else. We have to do better. This is the mechanism that I have in front of me to do that, so that's how we're going down that road.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And mine was a little bit along the lines of Representative Lilly's, and you're just hitting on some of it, too, as last year was a budget year. We underfunded our state agency requests. This year, we're midstream in a biennium where we're asking them to take money away from something to go into cybersecurity, which we all agree. I mean, there's no disagreement on the spirit of what is happening. But I feel like the timing of asking our agencies after last year, a budget year, we heard them in multiple ways talk about issues related to this. We didn't heed the request to fully fund their request. Now we're at a point mid-biennium where we're not in a budget year asking them to change their budgets and doing it in a way where we're not providing funding when it is, we do sit in a surplus. So I also just share concerns if we're serious about cybersecurity. And I think what you're getting at here is good, and I agree we need to do it, but just the spirit of a mid-biennium change without any funding makes it really difficult to hear that we're taking it as serious as we need to.
Representative.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Olson, I want to go back again to talk about the fact that we did put money in the bill last year for cyber tools. We did. It was $26 million. Mm-hmm. We put it in the bill. And we got it off the floor. We took it to conference committee. And Commissioner Franz negotiated it away at the governor's direction. And I spoke to Commissioner then Boozy, and he said $26 million would have been a fantastic amount of money to come up with cyber tools. So I understand, but we didn't underfund this last year. We provided a very ample amount of money for cyber tools. So I understand your concern, but this effective date is July of 18. You know, so most of the projects are probably underway. This is going to have a bigger effect for projects moving forward. But we have got to do this. And we had a solution last time that got negotiated away at the governor's request. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I appreciate Representative Nash bringing this issue forward, because when I look at how we handle issues that are that important, Mr. Paul, did you care to comment?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to follow up on the explanation. I apologize if my explanation about that that $87,000 was inadequate. I do think that we've got it explained on page 7 of the fiscal note, and I'm happy to take any follow-up questions as to how we arrived at that or why we believe that the added complexity warrants another FTE.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. So before we move on from this bill, I just want to applaud you, Representative Nash, for bringing this forward. I am surprised, actually, that we have to put this in legislation, because I would assume that if you're viewing cybersecurity as the number one priority for the agency, that that would be part of how they budget and how they manage projects going forward. I know that any entity out there that has this, they look at their top priorities. What do we need to do? And what we would like to do. And cybersecurity obviously is a need-to-do item, and yet we don't have to do that. So I apologize that you have to go through the gymnastics of putting this bill forward, because you assume that this would be part of the budgeting anyway, especially when, you know, it was okay to use $2.5 million for, you know, new office space, but not cybersecurity. So I applaud your efforts, and with that, Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 2868 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus state government finance bill, as amended. And Representative Nash, you want to move House File 3570.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move 3570 before the committee, and I do have an author's amendment if we could also move that.
Representative Nash moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author wishes. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Nash, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill essentially says that if an enterprise software project is going to be undertaken, and it will be, there will be more software projects in the state of Minnesota. It is the nature of IT. There's going to be more. I would hope, and this is directed towards the commissioner, I hope that we get away from putting MIM before some of our new software initiatives, because, you know, bad taste in your mouth.
going to do more software. And what this bill says is that moving forward, if we're going to do an enterprise software project, that we should go to bid. And we should look for a way to buy versus build, because as we have seen in recent history, some software hasn't really gone all that well. And we don't need to beat the drum on the names, because you know them all. And there was one just last week that the commissioner prevented from going live. But again, it's an excellent example of the fact that we need to look to the private sector, to somebody who has perhaps already built something that can be sold to all 50 states and the various territories that have their own operating softwares. It is an important issue for, I think, Minnesotans, and that if we can put up some guardrails to afford Minnesotans some confidence that we are looking at whatever future software project it is, that we're going to go out and look and see if some enterprising company has built something that can be customized to the point that it will meet some of the specific needs that Minnesota is inevitably going to have, because all states will do something somewhat differently. It's not a revolutionary idea, but again, I find myself putting a non-revolutionary idea in a bill. And, Madam Chair, here we are.
Okay, is there anyone else? Commissioner, do you wish to testify on this bill?
Welcome.
Again.
It's like we're getting to be old friends.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Joanna Clyborn. I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Information Technology Services. House File 3570 would mandate that if funding for an information technology project is made to an agency other than MINUT, the IT system must be developed, designed, and built through a vendor contract. Members should be aware that despite the passage of the IT consolidation law, IT project appropriations have not been made to MINUT. In fact, they continue to be made to the agency that will be served by the resulting IT system. This approach was taken because federal funding restricts that certain funds remain under the control and direction of the relevant agency commissioner. For example, federal restrictions on game and fish funds requires licensed funds to be managed by the agency overseeing the game and fish programs and license revenue in our state, the DNR. Appropriating information technology funds to MINUT directly would actually risk a federal finding of diversion of DNR funds, as well as DNR losing the management control of those funds. When the legislature does appropriation funds to an agency for an IT project, MINUT staff work with our agency partners to assess the best method for cost effective, successful, and timely completion of the project. This is often referred to as a build or buy analysis. We help evaluate what projects, products are available on the commercial market. We reach out to other states to talk to them about what they've been doing, what has worked well, what have they used. In many cases, this will result in an RFP or a request for proposals to identify a commercial off-the-shelf product that can be implemented or customized to meet an agency's needs. Makes sense, right? I mean, why would I build something that's already in existence? In many cases, this assessment makes it clear that whether it's easier to buy that and adjust if needed, or do we need to make the assessment that state staff can actually do the production cost more quickly and more effectively to complete that project? This is especially the case when it relates to projects to make changes in either existing or enhancing legacy systems. So, for example, when the legislature mandates program changes or necessitates IT work, state staff have years of experience operating, maintaining, and enhancing these legacy systems and are often much better positioned to complete projects that impact existing systems. Requiring these projects to be put out for bid would increase the overall cost and length of implementation timelines. Additional time and expenses would be required to accommodate the RFP process and procurement. There would be additional time and expense required to train, acclimate vendor staff to the state's legacy systems, which in many cases, as we know, are decades old. If the legislature were to change historic practice and appropriate dollars directly to MINUT for IT projects when they are to be completed in-house, then a build or buy analysis would have to be completed before the final passage of any bill that requires IT project work. This would make it necessary to determine whether an appropriation should be made to the agency or to MNIT. It is hard to see how such an analysis could be completed in the midst of a fluid legislative session where legislation is continuously changing as it moves through the committee process. And in cases when internal build is preferable, we are concerned about the impact of federal funding if the appropriation is made to MNIT directly, as this bill would require. We plan to work with the author to better understand the intent of the mechanism that is envisioned by House File 3570 and address the state agency concerns. I fully recognize the legislators' frustration with the troubled rollout of MNLARS systems and other IT projects that the state has faced in recent years. But it's important to recognize there's no silver bullet for ensuring IT project success. And by the way, the two main problems that we've had in the past were, in fact, let out for contract bid and handled commercially initially. Failures and major challenges that have occurred when projects are outsourced occur just as much as when they are internally handled. Each project must be treated differently, and it's important that the same statute provides the flexibility needed to craft the most effective approach in each case as directed by the legislature or the agency's needs. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon again. I'm Alice Roberts-Davis, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Administration. Madam Chair and members, again, I'd like to respectfully request that we, that the Chair request a fiscal note on this bill.
Great. Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? All right. Members, questions? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nash. Again, I'm not a programmer or any of those sort of things, but I happen to have one at home. And so I hear every day, and she works with healthcare systems, and she's a programmer. Every day she's programming and tweaking software. So are you saying that we could just pick up software and then never have this is horrible what's happened. I mean, we get it. Everybody is in full agreement where we're at. But, you know, every day we've got these folks here, and it's just, I don't know how it's going to get better. You know, so that's really not related to my question. But it's like, at some point, we got to let these people go do their job. So that's one point. But and I know you get that. I know you do, because you have come from the private sector, and you would not want your staff sitting in these meetings. But I don't know how. So you think that private sector, we're going to be able to pick up some free software? What's that website? I can't remember what it is. My son had me do it once. I downloaded a free software, like an Adobe Photoshop kind of thing, and I don't know. ProSource, what's that called? I can't remember. But anyways, I downloaded a program, but it didn't work as well as the original. And you think we're going to be able, just because it goes private, that there won't be any problems, we'll just be able to come up with a better system?
Representative Nash.
Well, Representative Lilly, Madam Chair.
Oh, there won't be problems.
Representative Lilly.
Sorry.
Couple things. One, I'm obviously talking about spending money on software programs, so no, we're not going to be using freeware, so that's not my intent. My intent is, much like we changed gears late last year to go with a private vendor to handle the real ID piece, that's kind of the conversation that we should be having. And if you'll all look on line 1.3, and Mr. Gehring may want to weigh in on this, it says, unless money is expressly appropriated. So there's a mechanism to handle this deep concern that seems to be being shared with us. is that there is a way that if it's brought to our attention that there's no private vendor or there's another way, there's another pot of money, we can expressly appropriate money. So it's not like we're holding a gun to their head and saying you always have to go out. What we're saying is you've got to go out and look, because much like Fast Enterprises exists and they've built this so that it could be sold to all 50 states, they've done the work. They've done the heavy lifting. And you can't sell a piece of software necessarily unless it works. And there will be bugs with that piece of software as well. But when you enter a contract relationship, you enter in that relationship assuming that if things go badly, it's on them. There will be some internal costs, but it's on them to fix it. So, you know, I'm not advocating that we download things off of the internet for free. But what I'm saying is that there is a step that we should be taking so that you can look at your constituents in the eye and say, we did this with more transparency, we did this at a higher level of accountability, and that we afford an opportunity for express appropriation to happen if we find out that there's just nothing else that exists out there. So, again, and the commissioner is going to say again that we went down the road of private relationships with HP or whoever. I don't know what went wrong because we can't get at that information. But there's a non-disclosure that happened with HP from back in the day. So I don't know. You don't know. The commissioner knows because she has access to that, but I don't. But we should be able to very easily go out to bid, just like we do in the real world, and say, if it exists, great. If it doesn't, well, then we have to come back to the legislature and say, we need money because we have to do this internally, because it's something that's so unique to us that then we have to do it internally.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nash, I appreciate the dialogue. I just think you're... I mean, just to be totally clear, I mean, this whole thing is bad, and we all understand that. But I don't know that, you know, this is a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking, but these tweaks on computer systems, I know you know this, continually in the private sector need, you know, it's not the silver bullet all the time. I mean, I could go through a list of companies that have just had epic problems, you know, in the news. I mean, I don't know if you're sitting on your 4-inch pad over there, like Mr. Facebook was yesterday. You don't need it, you're pretty tall. But,
I'm not sure what that means.
Oh, the owner of Facebook at Congress was, anyways, it's not that funny, I guess. But no, I know that you're very bright and that you know that there's problems in the private sector. So we want, you know, people to get their tabs and their, you know, we all want that. It's a horrible situation, and I'm not sure that the private sector is always the silver bullet answer. And I mean, I wish it was actually, if that's the case. Or I wish that we were at where we're at. So I'm not sure that your bill is totally the answer. But please, at some point, let, you know, this whole committee, please let our team go out and go do the work. I mean, and let them, I mean, I imagine they're doing these same meetings in the Senate. And I don't know. We were all in a long meeting yesterday. We're in one today. I would imagine they got preparation. And then I don't know how you would, you know, as a business owner in this industry, I mean, you yourself especially must, there's no way you would want your team here day after day after day doing this. And we know it's bad, so I'm just not sure that you're really solving it. Maybe these are meetings that we could do during the off session. Of course, I mean, I can't pass anything, so no, that's right. But I don't know. It's more of a statement than a question, but thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nash, you just touched on this a little bit, and it was something I was thinking about with the Howe bill as well. If we're contracting with private vendors and the accountability is in the contract that the state agency makes with the private vendor, how do we ensure that we can have the kind of oversight and clarity that we need? I mean, again, we bring our state agencies in front of us, and we ask all the questions. We give them strict guardrails. We have that ability to do that here in this committee and other settings. How do you see that
being able to, how can we have that accountability with the private sector and the vendors? I mean, is it still going to be through, do you, I mean, you said it with the HP contract they had, we weren't able to do that. Like, how are we going to ensure that we can have the accountability we need from the private sector? Because it is still state funding. Mm-hmm. So it's our state money going through, you know, the contracts usually go through the Department of Administration. They contract out with vendors. That's a far removal then from the accountability and the money. And if we're going to hold our state agencies to this level of scrutiny, and in my mind a little bit of a barrage at times, how are we going to be able to do that to private vendors with the bill that you have in front of us?
Representative.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, I'm not eliminating Minute. We'll still have a commissioner. We'll still have people who enforce contracts. We'll still have people who are responsible for those contracts. We'll still have people at Minute who are responsible for the specifics of those contracts. And I'm not advocating for us to do that. God knows I didn't come here to mirror that which I do in my private world every day, but we find ourselves at a crossroads where we have to make a decision because we are the only ones, and we've had this conversation before, you and I, in committee. We are the only ones that appropriate money. We are the only ones that set direction for the agencies. We are the only ones who put up those guardrails. We do that. That's what we are sent here to do. So we are asked by the people who we work for in all of your districts to say, go fix this. And I'm not trying to be punitive. The commissioner may feel like it's punitive sometimes, but I'm not trying to be punitive. What I'm trying to do is say there is a better way to acquire software. And if there isn't a piece of software, I have a Ford for that. Unless it's, you know, unless there's nothing out there, we can appropriate money for that. So I would encourage us to do this bill. I have another bill out there that still didn't get it done, but there is a hopefully a committee that could just be all IT. That would be exciting stuff. Well, maybe for just me. But we set the direction, Representative Olson. That's what we're here to do, not to micromanage. This is setting direction. And I'm not trying to be there alongside of them when they're making purchases, because that's not my job. My job and your job and all of our jobs is to appropriate the money and set the guidelines by which it's spent.
Madam Chair, can I follow? And I agree. I actually hear you, what you're saying there. So then my question is, how in your bill and what you're proposing, do we have that accountability? What will, you know, how can we ensure that accountability with the private vendors? Are you expecting certain ways that contracts will be written so that we have the accountability if we needed to bring in a private vendor? Like, how does that accountability to the money we're spending? You're right. We can appropriate money to the agencies that then can contract with the vendors. But could you speak to how we can have that level of accountability with the private sector that we do have with our state agencies when we do this?
Representative.
Madam Chair, I'm going to phone a friend to Mr. Gehring. Mr. Gehring, simple question. When we enter a contract with a private vendor, we, like all contracts, the state builds in to those contracts ways that we can make sure that performance is actually carried out. Is that correct?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, correct.
Representative Olson. Correct, and I hear that, but then you said with the HP contract that didn't happen.
Representative. Well, Madam Chair and Representative Olson, I don't know that it did. I don't know that it didn't because we're not allowed to read what happened there. That has a non-disclosure. We don't know what happened.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's the point of what I'm making, that the accountability with the private, if we're going to go through our state agencies and we have a level of scrutiny and the ability to talk to them, you know, I'm just worried that if we have the level of accountability through our state agencies with our vendors, that the level of scrutiny and the level of accountability and the guardrails we set up, we have a little less control over that with the way the money is spent going into a private sector. So that's the only point. Because we don't set those contracts. You know, it's up to the state agencies to design what that looks like and those methods of accountability. So I just want to make sure, the point being, if we're going to move away from spending in our state agencies and be able to give money to private sector to do work that the state used to do, I want to make sure that we're being good stewards of those resources.
Representative. I have a question. So Commissioner Clyburn, when you
when you enter into contracts with state vendors, because you do it on a regular basis, this is not something new that the agency. So if you have a contractor that fails to perform, are you able to recoup money and other amenities? I assume that's part of the contracts that you make with them. Is that part of that? Are you able to recoup the loss?
Madam Chair, members, yes. Contracts have performance contract requirements in there, and a failure to perform, and those are usually specified. It often comes down to the vendor indicating that performance was met, the person or the agency saying we don't believe that the level of performance was met. Usually what happens, there's some sort of mediation that occurs, and we kind of reach a meeting of the minds, given potentially the cost it might take to take the matter to litigation in a court setting, for example.
And Commissioner, when you have state employees or employees of Minute that fail to perform, what happens in that situation? Are you able to recoup the loss from work that they perform?
Madam Chair, members, are you asking if I can assign pecuniary value of money, take money from employees if they fail to perform?
In essence, because, I mean, if you're looking at a vendor contractor, obviously if they fail to perform, they don't follow the performance measures that were outlined in the contract, because you have a contract that outlines all of it, right? But you don't necessarily have a contract that outlines performance measures for the employees of Minute. And so I'm assuming that you wouldn't be able to recoup or claw back any of that from those that are actually internal employees. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members, depending on what the issue of non-performance is, I can terminate employment. I can demote. I can do lots of different things after appropriate due process and investigation of the issue. But I'm not aware of a methodology that allows me, unlike the military, to dock salary from someone who's failed to meet whatever the ethical or standard of care is required.
Right. And so in this last situation with MNLARS, you have one person that you terminated out of all of those that were responsible for it, right? So as far as recouping of the loss, there wasn't anything that actually to protect the state. There was no guardrails around it because you were having it done internally. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members, couldn't fire anyone else. They were all gone. So the reality is once we had the information and the appropriate amount of due process was taken, I terminated the remaining person on the project, not because of any other reason than their performance that failed to meet what I believe to be the standard of care in that project.
Representative Nash, I appreciate this component in particular because it does give the state greater protection, if you will, when something bad like MNLARS happens or MNSHR or any of the other hosts of projects that you can point to. So I appreciate you doing that. I've got Representative Fenton and then Representative Ubel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nash and Representative Olson. I did want to point out that there is accountability, and I think the members of this committee, I think, participated and saw that accountability when we had the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority in here, as well as they use outside vendors for security and other issues. We had their vendors in here also. So there is the mechanism for accountability when we use outside vendors.
Representative Ubel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nash. I think this is a good bill, and I think as time goes by, it's going to probably evolve and everything else. But if you were someone that was watching TV right now, or you somebody out on the street, and you ask somebody who's going to do a better job, government or the private sector, I think we all know what the answer is going to be, and. Because of the fact, if we go outside with independent vendors and everything else, non-performance equals losses or bankruptcy in the private sector. It doesn't happen in the public sector that way. We just appropriate more money and things like that. The real key to this proposal here is for the administration to write RFPs that are going to be good, that are going to set the parameters out, that are going to provide for penalties for non-performance. And it's easy to do that in a contract, in an RFP, much easier than what Commissioner Claiborne has been struggling with over the last couple of months she's been here. So, you know, I like the idea that we can quantify the value of these private contracts with the costs, and we can hold the private contractor's feet to the fire. There's performance deadlines and other things like that. And in the public sector, those performance deadlines keep slipping backwards. But in the private sector, we're gonna see that they have to perform that way. So I think it's a very good bill. I think it's a good answer to this. It'll definitely downsize Minute. There's no question about that. But Minute will still have a very valuable function for the state of Minnesota. And what we've been doing isn't working. It's just not working. And it's not just Minute here and Winlars. It's many other systems too. So, and we do have the out. I mean, I probably wouldn't vote for this bill unless Representative Nash has the 1.15 line there, Section B, unless money is expressly appropriated by the state chief information officer. I think that we're on the right track here, and I certainly appreciate what you're doing, and I can see where we might have some light at the end of the tunnel.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there was a question, or the Commissioner was going to respond to something. I would just want to make sure if she had the chance to do that, if she needed to, before we wrap up.
Madam Chair, members, I respectfully disagree that this is a good idea. This actually gets to an effect of backdoor to decentralization is what it really does. There is no corporation that I'm aware of that would dictate its internal IT shop could not look at building and had to do everything outhouse in order to manage their IT projects. I'm not aware of any corporation that would dictate that specifically. Additionally, if this bill passes the way it is, we're going to have some issues with the appropriation, for example, state dollars. If you appropriate state dollars to my agency, the ability, if it's a program that has a federal match, a federal dollar match, would not be able to occur. Lastly, when you look at B specifically, this isn't just about software. Now, I get that I've got some legal training background, but I like to parse statutes for fun sometimes. And when I parse this statute and I read it, it specifically says all state information and telecommunications projects must be developed, designed, and built through a vendor contract. So you need an update? Can't do it. You need a piece of phone equipment that we might have that you need a small project on? The way I read this, I'll read the amendment in one moment. Can't do it. So
line 1.15.
Right. So I'm looking at that. All enterprise software projects must either be purchased or built through a vendor contract. Again, the original bill prior to amendment indicates that that's the case. When I look at this amendment, it still puts it into the software piece. No matter what it is that you were asking or wanting to do, we're going to have the match problem, and you're not giving me an opportunity to work with the agency to determine if a build or buy, which is what we already do, is the appropriate solution. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the Commissioner, after going through the report yesterday and reading that, I'm wondering, when you talk about corporate America, you have a village, you have a responsibility as a CEO, as a board of directors, to take care of the shareholders. My sense is that we haven't taken care of the shareholders here. The shareholders are our taxpayers. We spent $100 million and haven't delivered a product. So to compare what Minute has done relative to Minmars to the corporate world, where people would be fired. There probably would be clawbacks if you wasted $100 million, I think is unfair. So the other part of this is that reading that through, I didn't see much diligence in the RFP. Now, if you're writing an RFP and putting it out to private industry, you're writing standards. You've got, to some extent, you've got what you need, which is two opposing forces. You wanting the work done as efficiently and as inexpensively as possible, the vendor over here trying to make money. You've got those two competing things that make for a good product. I didn't see any of that in here. What I saw was an agency that was trying to build this thing themselves, fired the firm halfway through because of communication or whatever. So I think it's really unfair to compare this to corporate America in a number of ways. And this idea of not mandating an RFP to me is, it just doesn't fit. Because if you would have done a good of RFP on this whole project up front, I don't think we'd be where we are today.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members, that's simply not true. We've already delivered over $1 billion in revenue on this system. The RFP, the original contract that was actually let before Minute even existed. So I understand that piece, but remember, there's a time warp I can't go back to. And there was a contractor, and it wasn't just a matter of they didn't meet some timelines. There were serious issues with the code. There were serious problems along the way. That report actually is available to the legislature, as I understand it. There is a non-disparagement requirement within that contract, which means we can't say anything bad, right? But the report itself and the findings in that contract are certainly available to the legislature, and I would have presumed that part of the audit previously done would have included some of the findings of the HP contract as well. But it is true that in corporate America, there are projects that have failed. There are IT things that do not go out the way they're supposed to. Am I excusing what has occurred with Minlars? Absolutely not. I would not be sitting here if I thought that there was some reason I could say, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. It's a big deal because I'm a taxpayer, and for some of you, you are my legislators. And so with that said, I expect my legislative body to be held accountable, as well as holding me as the Commissioner Minute accountable. But at the same time, you've got to give me an opportunity, my agency, to succeed. And this is basically another way to get to decentralization and no ability of something we already do, which is build and buy. If we're worried about contracting, let's look at the contracting process and what we need to have in there. But there's some options to look at. I don't believe this is the vehicle that gets you the accountability that you're looking for.
Representative Bogle.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner. I know I look at things simply sometimes from a business perspective, but in this case, we are the board of directors. We are the ones that represent the shareholders who are the taxpayers here. It isn't going right. And my feeling is that we have to do something. And what we have to do is put some controls on this ourselves, unfortunately. And it may be a little more invasive than it may be in a regular situation. But again, I go back to, if there would have been a more competitive RFP process from the very start of this, I don't think we'd be where we are today. And we can argue the technicalities of that, but the bottom line is the specs were set somewhat subjectively as I read this through, and therefore the people didn't know where they were going, they didn't produce. So I'm not looking for an argument, but I don't think it's fair to blame corporate America by saying that they screw up just as bad, because if they do, their shareholders take it, but then they also get clawbacks at the personal level, which we don't have here. So I'm not going to get into an argument, but I really believe that it's not fair.
Okay. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question for the Commissioner. I feel like a lot of the bills that lately have been coming around our committee are done to make a process more efficient, to create guardrails to protect taxpayers, but I think they might be doing the opposite. I think they might be costing our state more money. I think they might make government less effective. And I think as we're talking about shareholders, as taxpayers, we might be failing them. And that's kind of what I hear you saying with this bill, that we're going to end up failing our taxpayers. So what I want to understand and see, because our responsibility, I think, in this committee is to make sure that our state agencies are using the money that we appropriate to them effectively, and that we are being good stewards of taxpayer dollars. And so I would like you to help me understand, if we were thinking about a Minute IT employee who might work, you know, 10 hours on a particular project, if you were to contract that out, how much would an IT contractor cost, and is there a cost saving if you had it done in-house? Because I think it's an important thing for us, because there isn't a way for us to know right now the kind of damage this can do without actually having that particular piece analyzed for us. So can you give me a comparison of like how much an IT contractor would cost us an hour, and how much you pay maybe your staff who would do a similar job an hour?
Madam Chair, members, it depends. So it depends on the skill set that we need, and sometimes we do have to rely on contractors because it is more cost effective to contract outside of the agency for those skill sets that, frankly, we can't pay the salary for. So when you look at the more specialized areas that you need in various projects, those rates can be anywhere as low as $175 to $350, $400 an hour. Whereas we do have costs for employees, such as not just their salary, but benefits that go with that as well. But we can't pay them competitively what you make in the private sector at various levels. And that's just the reality of it. One of the reasons that you have chief information officers in state government across the United States that don't stay in their positions very long is, frankly, compared to the private sector, there's a huge difference in the costs and the stress that they deal with. And so each project requires us to look at what is more efficient. Every project that we take on, we look at, is it more cost efficient to go outside and have contractors do that or use a vendor? Or is it more cost effective? What's the rate that we would effectively be able to do it for inside our agency? I do agree with you that we don't know the impact that this bill could have. Contracts do have clawback provisions, as they do across the board. It's standard contracting procedure, whether you're in-house or whether you are a private entity. And I'm not that kind of attorney, but unless you've got some, you know, intentional tort going on, and you've generally, they're not personally liable employees of any organization. And so it really, again, just depends. But yes, the way this bill is structured, it would basically say that anything that's out there, if there is an equivalent and that contract could be let for $1 gazillion, we're going to go with $1 gazillion contract, even though we might be able to do it for $10,000. There needs to be a balanced approach to government. I don't think government should be growing, but we have to grow where it is right to have the skill sets that we need to have, and we need to decrease in those areas where we can effectively move the work out of house where it makes sense for our tax dollars to be spent elsewhere, such as the specialized skill sets that we may not want to pay for that person to at an exorbitant rate of $200,000 a year minimum, when we could contract on our contract basis, and then when we're done, ramp off and move on to the next thing.
Representative Omar. Representative Ugo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. There's just a couple of things, a couple points I want to make. And one of them is, I think we all need to understand, and I think we all feel this way, that the people at Minute and IT and everything else are good people, mm-hmm. are really good people. And we've been beaten up by Commissioner Claiborne and all that, but they are very good people, and they're working very hard. And I understand that. The problem is, we, collectively, all of us sitting in this room, have failed them because of past management mistakes. I want to emphasize past management mistakes. But be that as it may, what Representative Nash here has brought to us is essentially a reorganization. Private business goes through reorgs all the time. If they don't, they die. You can look at Sears or any of the major retailers right now in the way that they have to be nimble and change. And Target is probably doing that. So government isn't very good at being nimble. Government doesn't change very quickly at all. And so to give the private sector a chance at this and then have the out that, yes, we can do it ourselves if we want, drive that competitive cost down. Representative Omar, you know, you ask the question, how much does it cost for programmers and things? Well, you know, we don't know. But we do know that if you go out for a good RFP and you get a couple people bidding on it, it's going to be the market price. And that's probably going to be pretty good, at least as good as you can get. So I just wanted to make those points. We've got good people that are working hard. I don't want to disparage them. We have failed them from a management perspective. And what Representative Nash is doing is trying to change that management and reorganize this thing and make it successful. Thank you.
Representative Nash, closing comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Had it not been for realistically the abject failure of some large enterprise software projects, I wouldn't be doing this. There's no need. But they are giant failures. And Representative Omar said that she would like to make government more effective, as would I. But I'm not sure that we could be any less effective than what Minlar's is, and that's really kind of what jump-started my thought process on this, is we've got to do better. And there are mechanisms built into this to do something other than go outside. I have provided for that. And we can work on it to make people feel a little more comfortable with that, because we're not done with the bill yet. But this is not something that is meant to be punitive. I agree with Representative Uglum that the people at Minute are good folks. But good Lord, folks, we owe it to the taxpayers of Minnesota to make sure that the future software, and like I said, there's going to be more software. We have to do it right. And if finding an outside vendor can be the solution, then let's do that. But let's not just say, well, we're going to absolve ourselves of responsibility. Again, that's why we're here. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you.
Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 3570, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Nash. Commissioner Claiborne, can I have you come back? Members, in your packets, you have an article dealing with the issue of the story that was done on the office space by KSB. And Representative Kanesh Podin, we had to pause you, my apologies. But if you want to start us off, you had a question from yesterday.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I remember my question correctly, yesterday, I asked you to respond to that article, the investigation by KMSTP, and if you would explain the circumstances around and the cost that were incurred when you had to reorganize your staff and kind of recube everybody into a different space. If you would just sort of explain that. We've read articles, we've heard things, but it's for me, it's always important to hear it from where the folks that were affected and where it came from, and we'd like to hear your perspective. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members. I want to direct you to a letter, I think that should be in your folders as well, that is dated April 4, 2018, which is a letter I wrote to Senator Kiffmeyer. So I drafted this letter in response to concerns raised by Senator Kiffmeyer, who had spoken with KTSP about cubicle reconfiguration that's ongoing within Minutes Central Centennial Building offices. So the letter itself outlines how it would actually violate, and this gets to one of the questions that was asked by the way representative about the Minlarge piece. The letter outlines basically how it would violate state policy and law, as well as federal regulations, to use funds or funding mechanisms that was used for the cubicle reconfiguration to fund the Minlarge project. This cubicle reconfiguration is actually funded through Minute's centralized service rate package. Minute is leveraging a master lease program that's run through MMB that allows state agencies to pay over a certain amount of time for depreciable assets. So think of it as like getting a loan. The assets are being purchased, in this case, are cubicles that are two-thirds the size of our existing cubicles. Now, we're wondering, why would I make cubicle sizes smaller? Well, that's because we have some space pressures in other agencies that require the relocation of Minutes, personnel, employees who are working within other agencies, who are out at other agencies that we support that are delivering centralized IT services. And so as part of ensuring that we minimize costs, and to ensure that the workflow is set up in a centralized manner that makes sense, especially if they're in a particular line of business or a particular line of support that they provide, it makes sense from a business perspective and process to house them together. Rather than leasing additional space, we opted to increase the density of the staff, meaning pack more people in a smaller space. And again, to do that, I had to reduce the cube size. The other piece of that is that the current cubicles that were there were way out of date in their electrical coding and some other issues there that could have been a safety hazard. But it causes me great concern that a legislator would be under the impression that Minutes somehow was coming to the legislature and indicating that we needed money for Minlarge and that we somehow had money sitting around that could have been used towards that work. And frankly, such an indication is false. It's not true. To suggest we do such a thing, frankly, would suggest that I violate state and federal law, especially when the legislature specifically set up funding silos to ensure that we would not take money from one particular project and move it over to another without that type of authorization. In fact, had I redirected such appropriation, I could only imagine the type of hearing I'd be in right now. And so if you have questions really about how to understand how it was necessary or how we got there, I actually do have someone here who can talk about the process and the lease processing itself. But rather, I think the other piece of that is to think that I went out and took $2.5 million and said, here you go. Here's $2.5 million. There isn't an account with $2.5 million sitting in it that I could write a check for and send over to somewhere. This was also done well last year before we knew that this money was going to be needed. So at no time did I indicate that I have a pot of $2.5 million that I could have used towards Minlarge or something else. Additionally, there are significant cost savings that occur with this reconfiguration of these cubicles to the tune of $483,000, I think it is, per year over time. And so I'm willing to trade some employee comfort in order to create that space. Just because I have a project that is right now off the rails and being brought back to where it needs to go does not mean that I don't have an entire other agency and lines of effort and savings that I need to bring within reason. So that's why that project got there and how it got to, I think, where we are here today.
Representative Nash-Purdy.
Thank you for that explanation. Do you feel that this new reconfiguration will allow for more effective work output, or do you feel that the fact that you are having to put more employees into a smaller space in order to do the work that you've been tasked with is going to cause it to be less efficient? You did say that there was a cost savings, and that was one of my big questions, but I'm just wondering about productivity and sort of the work atmosphere for the employees that are now in a smaller cube, just two-thirds the size of one that they were in.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members, I did have that concern. I don't trust always what people tell me. I like to go and ask questions of people. I get in trouble when I lose my handlers, so to speak. And so I walked around and I talked to people and I said, how's this working? Are you able to be on the phone without hearing your neighbor? Are you able to get work done? Are you feeling like you're really cramped in? And there's some new creative things that they did. So, for example, the cube space does not allow for two people to have a chair next to each other to have a conversation within that cube. And so they have these filing cabinets that are a little square that has a little cushion on top so you can pull it out so someone could sit on it if you want to have a conversation within your cube. I asked about workflow. Does this make sense? It did give the management teams an opportunity to talk about workflow and how to better improve cross communications. So whereas some might have walls up so that there's a little bit more of privacy when you're on the phone, others have a little bit more of a configuration that's open spaced, because for example the service desk that's troubleshooting a problem may need to lean over to the person in the cube next to them and say, hey, are you seeing this issue? Or, hey, can I have you tap this piece of the product so that we can make sure that Mary, who's sitting behind me, is seeing this as well? So they are configured to be much more efficient. If you ask them, I'm sure they would love more space, but I believe that the configuration that they're in right now is acceptable, and it gives the work environment that they need while creating a more centralized process for them.
And then just, we have a limited amount of time here, and we still have another issue to get through. So members, if we aren't able to finish here, we'll come back at 8 o'clock tonight, so be mindful of that. Representative Kunesh Pudin.
I think I've done. You answered the questions I have. Thank you.
Great. Commissioner, I have some questions. Could you have used the $2.5 million towards data center consolidation?
Madam Chair, members, no, I do not believe that that would have been able to occur.
I think it would be helpful if you maybe did some research on that to find out if that's truly the case. I know that DPS, they obviously have taken some liberties with the funds that are available to them. What concerns me with this is that you are looking at $2.5 million as an upfront cost, and over 3 years you'll only receive a savings of $462,000. And so I'm a little concerned about that. Did you ever consider that maybe if you were going to utilize these funds, that cybersecurity, as I know that's a top priority for Minute, that maybe that would have been a better use of those funds? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, members, first off, it's not $2.5 million that's being handed off right now. It's an overtime. Secondly, that contract was signed back in fall of last year. So that analysis I would not have been able to do that analysis.
Is there somebody that is part of your office that was part of that decision-making process, realizing that you weren't there? So do you have your financial officer here that could comment to that? I think that would be helpful.
Excuse me one moment.
The question is the analysis of the contract last year and whether we thought we could use that money elsewhere.
Madam Chair, members, I will get you an in-writing response to that question. But again, there's also some efficiencies that have to be gained from not leasing additional space in other places, and to, as part of consolidation, ensure that we are working efficiently and productively. So I will get you an answer back, but I understand, I think, where you're going with that question.
And Commissioner, if you were to go to a vendor contract model, would you need that kind of space and would that reduce your costs for space?
Madam Chair, members, we would still need that because that primarily is housed what we would call the centralized services. So your phone support, your desktop support, your you get locked out of your computer, HR services, and finance, all those things would have still had to have been consolidated.
And Commissioner, just to make sure I'm clear, the whole reason that you needed to do this is because you have a growing department and you need to fit these people somewhere else and you didn't have lease costs at other places. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members, that is not correct. I'm not growing employees. I'm pulling them back from agencies that they are at that are providing centralized services as part of Minute Central, but we're not housed with Minute Central, but we're rather doing centralized services out at the agencies. Those agencies would like their space back, and for productivity and workflow, it makes sense to bring them all together and have them in the same spot. Maybe a simplified version is imagine that you had four HR professionals working on the same team, but you farm two out to different locations, but they're supposed to all work together for the organization. It would make sense to bring them into the same location to provide that centralized support. I didn't grow additional people. I didn't hire additional people for this. I'm just bringing them all together in a space so that I don't have them out in different agencies. I also get much more visual control over those employees.
Commissioner, when I look at the numbers of FTEs for Minute, and you go back historically to 2007, it was then called the Office of Enterprise Technology. That was our Minute. So we did have a Minute, and that was in 2007. There was 320 FTEs. Then when you look at around, I think it was 2015, the number of FTEs for Minute was about 1,700. That was about the time that we started the consolidation piece. So the consolidation was passed in 2011. In 2015, we were looking at a number of 1,700 from 320. Then when you look at current day, you're out about 2,300 FTEs that you have for your office. So, you know, given all that on the FTE side of things, I'm just curious with the whole centralization and everything else that is part of it, have you considered billing back to these agencies for this space? And here's why I say this. Department of Administration bills every entity for the space that they consume. So, for example, when we did the SHPO transfer from the Historical Society over to the Department of Administration, they billed out to the Historical Society for this new space. They had to allocate that as part of their budgeting and so forth. So have you considered that as, rather than spending $2.5 million here, you could have focused that funding towards cybersecurity or other priorities for a moment. Have you considered that at all?
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to have Mr. Eichten explain some of the historical and go with that.
Sure, Mr. Eichten.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, John Eichten, Minute Services Legislative Director. To clarify a few things, first, there isn't $2.5 million to go spend on cybersecurity. It was a master lease financing program for the vast majority of that funding. That's for depreciable physical assets, so I want to be perfectly clear about that. Secondly, the FTE numbers that you're quoting, if you're talking 1,700 in 2015, I recall those numbers. They're from a state, I believe it's SWIFT or the HR system, and what you're going to see there is over time more employees appearing under Minute in the system. However, years before they became Minute employees, but the actual HR and financial transfer of those folks who paid their paycheck did take some time. So now I also want to be clear, there are more Minute employees now than there were in 2012, and that's because there's more IT getting done by state agencies, because that is the trajectory of society as a whole, and it's the same with state government. The legislature has also funded projects, discrete efforts that have a time-limited basis, and those projects have required additional unclassified temporary employees be brought on. So namely here, I'm going to point to the Department of Human Services and the systems modernization projects that the legislature funded in 2013. There's a federal match for that, of course, a significant federal match. There's a reason those dollars were appropriated to the Department of Human Services, because, and not to MNIT, because in order to get that federal match, the dollars have to be appropriated to the agency that qualifies for that federal match. So there has been growth in MNIT FTEs, as there's been growth in demand from an agency for more IT. And so in 2012, when the HR transfer in terms of authority and reporting occurred, I believe we were somewhere in the range of 2,100 to 2,200. So long before 2015, more than 2,100 employees were reporting to the state chief information officer. They did not show up in SWIFT as their paycheck being paid by MNIT. That's the clarity I wanted to bring.
But to my question, Mr. Eichten, my question is in other agencies, if you are taking over an employee, there is a bill-back system for the new space that they're consuming. So when you're transferring those people from DHS or whatever agency and bringing them into MNIT, what I've seen as the practice is then that those, it's billed out then to that mother agency, if you will, as you're making that transfer. So has MNIT done that at all?
Madam Chair, yes. So the cubicle reconfiguration we're talking about now is part of a facilities budget for the centralized services that we provide. And over many in years into the future, a portion each year will be baked into the rate for every service we provide centrally. Centrally, not at an agency, but centrally. And the cost of that space reconfiguration will be borne by the agencies who consume our centralized service, each according to their own amount of service that they consume. And that's precisely why if we were to use the Master Lease Financing Program to do cybersecurity or data center consolidation or fund MNLARS, we would be taking money from all agencies and pooling it, overcharging them, making a profit, which by law we're not allowed to do, and then directing that money to the Department of Public Safety to do MNLARS, and that would be illegal.
So, Mr. Eichten, how much chargebacks are you planning to do to each of the agencies?
We can get the numbers. You're asking every year what will be the incremental amount from this $2.5 million cubicle reconfiguration. How much will each agency pay every year? That's an exercise we could do, but there will be caveats to it, of course, because rates are reset every 2 years. And the cost of delivering a service is recalculated. The projected volumes of how much of that service is going to get consumed are recalculated based on the demand of the agency. And then rates are established based on those costs, those fixed costs, and those projected volumes.
So, Mr. Eichten, what I'm hearing you say is the $2.5 million is just a start.
No.
It's going to be the appetizer. Is it going to be more costs than going into the future, I assume?
Madam Chair, the $2.5 million is the $2.5 million. And that was the cost of this project, this cubicle reconfiguration project, to increase the density of staff, to enable centralized services staff who are out in different agencies to come into one space to carry out the IT consolidation that this legislature mandated. So, no, that the cost of this project is not going to grow over time. There will, of course, be additional operating costs. We have to put people in space. We have to give them cubes and computers. That's the operating cost that goes into the calculation of rates for the enterprise services that we provide.
And what will that cost be then as you're planning this out?
Madam Chair, I would need to know the cost of what? Cost of what service? Are you asking?
For each service for the agencies. Because you're centralizing it, now what are you going to be billing back to the agencies to help support that operation?
The cost of providing that operation, and only the cost of providing that operation.
So
if we go beyond that, we will be violating federal policy and law and state.
Mr. Eichten, I think this gets to the greater issue of the conversation that we've had about consolidation overall. Since it was passed in 2011, and we still don't have full consolidation. And the reports that I'm getting from different agencies that this is actually costing them more now than it did prior to. So I think we just need to have greater conversation centered on that.
Yes.
Because the intent of consolidation was not that it would actually cost more, that we would actually see savings within state government.
Thank
but
you.
That's for another day. I've got Representative Olson and then Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think mine is just more of a comment as we pivot
from the bills we were hearing, and I think there's no one here would argue with the idea that we have issues that we're trying to tackle and address, and I think we can debate bills in front of us around if privatization of our government services the way to go, and, you know, we had some good discussion about that. But what I think is hard is we go through the bills that were solution-focused, again, whether we agree or disagree on if they're the right solutions on how we tackle some of these problems in front of us. But I just find it hard that we're now going back in time with a commissioner who's been on the job for 2 months, who's fully owned some of what's been going on. And when we talk about, the private sector, would we expect a CEO and hold them to the scrutiny that we're holding a commissioner to continue to be here 2 months after being on the job and continually answer to things that, you know, have happened well before? And, you know, I'd just like to move on. Whether we agree, again, with if privatization of the services is right or what the solutions are, I'd rather spend our time debating the solutions than continuing to belabor the point and bring a commissioner that's been here on the job 2 months back time and time again. And, you know, I'm willing to come back at 8 p.m. tonight, and I'm sure the commissioner will, even if we don't have to. But I really hope we just continue to move forward and continue to do what we need to do and continue to find solutions to the problems that we all agree need to be addressed.
I'm reminded, too, I asked for the timeline yesterday of when it first realized, it was reported in the Meekin report yesterday, that when it first realized in early August that the Real ID was not going to happen in October of 2018 as originally planned. Can you tell me when the governor was first notified and then when you notified the legislature? And when I say you, I mean the agency itself.
Madam Chair, members, I have still not been able to ascertain when the governor was advised. I have asked that question, but I don't have an answer for you. I am aware, however, that this legislature was first advised that MNLARS would need additional money when the roadmap was rolled out. It is my understanding that the first time that the amount that would be needed came to light when that roadmap was rolled out on January 31st. I am aware that there was some behind-the-scenes conversations that may have occurred with the legislatures, various legislators, indicating that there was going to be some costs that were coming along because of the issues with MNLARS. I do not have an ability to tell you that the legislature fully understood the cost implications, and from what I can see in the questions that I've been asking, I'm not sure that Minute knew the true full cost until they brought Joan Redwing in November to start digging into some of these questions. And it is my assessment that Ms. Redwing was brought in entirely too late into this program to figure out the extent of the problems and issues. She's been doing yeoman's work, and it's not easy dealing with me, to be honest. But I think when she came in, there was an aha moment that everyone knew that there was a, I wouldn't say everyone, but I believe people knew that there was a problem. I don't think they fully, and I thought that they could fix it. I don't think they fully understood how big the problem was until between the combination of Microsoft that came in and did a performance assessment back in October because the system was having some stabilization issues. And then Ms. Redwing came in and started reading the SES reports, which are the risk reports, and doing a deep dive that it became clear what the system really needed.
Well, Commissioner, I appreciate those comments. You know, I've appreciated the tone and tenor that you've taken of the buck stops here, I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and all of those answers. And given all of that, those comments that you've made, I have full and utter faith in you that you will be able to figure out the timeline. The report says it was early August. That Minute realized that the Real ID wasn't going to be ready for prime time in October of 2018. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for when was the governor notified. You've told me when the legislature was notified. So just let me know when you get that answer, because I know that I can fully rely on you to get to the bottom of it, because I do appreciate your nothing's going to get past me attitude. So with that, I've got Representative Vogel. And you will end it for us today.
Wow. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just since we're information gathering, wondering if somebody could provide how many square feet of total space there was before this renovation, how many square feet after the renovation, how many cubes, and what the footprint of each cube is now, and then finally, what the cost of the lease is per square foot.
Mr. Acton, did you get all of that? So we've got a list of requests. We look forward to the responses from today and then also from yesterday, some of the committee hearing questions that members had. And so if we can get those as soon as possible, we really appreciate it. With that, members, we're going to delay the further questions on the Everett report for a later day and appreciate that. And we are all adjourned today.